Welcome to The Other 167. My name is Garrett Lail, and I just want to go on record that I think this is a very bad idea. But to be fair, that's never stopped me before, so why not? Have you ever wondered what would happen if you told a Baptist minister the truth about your day-to-day life? Well, I decided to stream it. Now, I wouldn't agree to do this with just any preacher, but my good friend Ben Pierce reluctantly agreed to come along for the ride, so thanks, Ben.
I guess I'm the preacher, and they tell me I do a decent job of that sometimes, but we're just two guys that truly are just average people who are seeking the Lord together, and I think that's the beauty of chasing after the Lord is, doesn't matter what your role is or what your job is, it's just what you're how you're going to seek Him.
Well, I appreciate you doing this and agreeing to this with me. When I first suggested it a couple of weeks ago, I'll be honest with you, like I told you that day, I didn't know if it was a good idea. I didn't really think it was a good idea.
Well, but I was of the same notion until I got to thinking about it myself.
But I appreciate you agreeing to do it because this is I'm pretty excited about this. I think for the listeners out there, the purpose of this show is, look, I have been a member of Ben's church since 2011, 12. It's been a little while.
That's about right.
There have been some extended absences on my part there, though, and Ben's been a really good friend of mine and someone. We've had some tough conversations here and there that I hadn't really wanted to have, but every time I've had a conversation with Ben, it's felt like I was just talking to my buddy that happened to be a preacher. For a Southern Baptist preacher, and I like to pick on him as a Southern Baptist because I'm a Southern Baptist too. I'm allowed to. But every time somebody talks to me and finds out I'm Southern Baptist, they say, "How are you a Southern Baptist? You don't fit that mold." I say, "Well, I'm not, but my preacher happens to be." Yeah. So, but anyway, but Ben's always just been a really easy guy to talk to. So,
I appreciate that.
I wanted to kind of put this thing together, just say, you know what? Everybody on Sunday mornings, we show up to church and we put our best on, and I drag my three kids in there, and we try to look our best for that 1 hour.
The perfect ham family.
Yeah. But you know, my relationship with God is not played out from 11 to 12 on Sunday morning. In fact, it's the opposite. I don't see church as my place to come show up and look, the part for that hour. That's my break. I see church as like rehab for sinners.
Yep.
Okay?
You
can't
look at it.
You really can't get in too much trouble for that hour.
Right.
You can sin. I've done it. It's a challenge, but you're set up for success for that hour.
Right.
To me, that's where I go to. I think it was like a football game or so. We're both pretty big football fans, so we can kind of relate this. That's not my game. That hour a week is not my hour to shine. That's my hour to review film and see what did I do last week I need to improve on, and what do I need to prepare for this week to get ready to go to battle. Because Sunday from 12 o'clock to Sunday at 10:30, 11 o'clock, that's where the struggle is. And it starts quick for me in this time of year because football starts at 1 o'clock.
That's right. Because who knows what the Panthers are going to put on the field. And I think I think that's a great analogy because, truth be known, Christianity really is about living in the trenches. It's not just showing up to church. I look at it as, and I think we talked about it earlier, man, church should be a place of where you're getting trained, where you're getting equipped, where you're being challenged to go out and be the disciples Monday through Friday. I mean, I just preached a sermon on, have you ever said TGIM?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if anybody that I know would say it. And my wife woke up Monday and she said, TGIM?
Yeah.
And because, hey, work is a place to where if there's ever been a place that we can demonstrate who Christ is and what He means to us, it should be in our workplace. And so I think it's one of, yeah, you're exactly right. Christianity is not just going to church. It's living every day. And I think that's what Christ would mean when He says, hey, I am your life. And I think that's where oftentimes we've gotten it backwards. We've put it as, okay, I go to church, I'm a good Christian. Well, okay, that's great. But yeah, what about Monday through Friday? Is it real?
Yeah.
And that's where we talked about it when we had lunch discussing this is, how do we help people be real? How do we help them there's not going to be perfect, but how do I do it each and every day to make at least one step closer?
I read so the last year and a half of my life I've made some positive changes, I think, overall, and I've gotten much, much closer with God and my relationship with Him, but I've also developed a lot stronger work ethic, which really hasn't, honestly, until I listened to the sermon from Sunday, I started to see those two start to overlap a little bit, but I had not really seen them as being tied together. But part of my work mentality comes from a book I listened to several times called Relentless. It was written by Michael Jordan's trainer. Nothing to do with Christianity, but it's something that talks about just trying to constantly strive to get 1% better every day, 1/10 percent better every day. And with my walk with God, that's, look, I told you before we started recording this thing, I'm like the equivalent on my spiritual health journey of being, I might have started at 400 pounds and I'm down to about 275 right now. I'm not in any kind of good spiritual shape, but even when I'm in perfect shape, I'm never going to be in perfect shape. I always want to be striving to be 1/10 percent better. Now, frankly, where I'm at now, I could afford some bigger gains than just 1/10 percent. but it's constantly striving to get better day in and day out. And I find myself much, much closer to God when I focus on my relationship with Him on Tuesday at 9 a.m. and Friday at 6 p.m. That's when I'm closer to God. It's not about how I am 11 to 12 on Sunday.
That's it.
And, you know, honestly, I'm probably not the best at even being there at 11 to 12 on Sunday. I might be listening to it on a walk or something like that. But that, to me, it's like, well, that's 1 hour of my 168 a week. You know, I think that was one of my thoughts for the show for this is, maybe we just call it the other 167. You know, we all know how to do it that 1 hour.
Yeah, I like that. The other 167. I like that a lot. But you're right, and I think one of the things to always keep in mind is Paul had that same. He might not have called it relentless. He might not have called it that 1% better. But Paul says in Philippians 3, you get to about verse 13 and 14. He says, forgetting those things that are behind. You know, Paul made some big mistakes too. He said, I press on to the higher calling. I press on as I push myself, just like an athlete, just like anybody else. If you want to get in shape, you got to start somewhere. But I'm going to push myself to go to the gym, even though 7 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning is not my bag. No, I'm going to press on that I may know Him. And I think it all comes down to, oftentimes, and I've always said this, you're going to do what's important to you.
Yeah.
And where I believe the key is, and I think Christ and Paul kind of gives us this, is if it's important to you, you're going to make the time and you're going to push towards this. And I think that's where oftentimes a lot of people are, is, all right, is it? And I think I always ask myself, is what I'm doing now, does it prove that my priorities, my values, everything that I'm pushing forward in my life and what I'm striving for, is it for Christ? Is it for, you know, something that matters?
Yeah.
You know, I think therein lies a big piece of it.
I think one of the things that's tough for Christians and also those who may not necessarily consider themselves Christians but are searching for something, they're searching for a closer connection to God, it's we tend to be kind of hard on ourselves. We know we're supposed to be perfect and supposed to sin, we're not supposed to do all these things. And if you are a believer and you're God is an important part of your life, I'll be honest, it feels pretty bad when you know you disappoint Him. Sure. I mean, it's not a good feeling. Sure. But, you know, I was thinking as you were talking about, you know, Paul made a lot of mistakes. Well, we're in our day-to-day lives, you know, again, talking about sports a lot. We had a kid at the football game on Saturday. My son's playing 11U Pop Warner, and I'm helping coach a little bit, very loosely. We had a kid drop a wide-open pass in the flat. He's one of the best players on the team. And this was a walk-in six if he catches his ball. And I could have scored.
Yeah, that's right.
But he's hitting himself on the helmet. He goes back to the huddle. And I don't know if it was the very next play, but about two or three plays later, quarterback throws up a prayer, and this kid comes down with like a one-hander over the top of the defender. Great catch. I was so proud of him. Yeah. So excited. Because we're kind of – in life, we know, okay, let the pass go, move on to the next one. I think that's something that when we mess up as Christians – it's hard to let it go because mm-hmm. we've got that guilt. Especially the closer you are to God, the harder that guilt can hit you a little bit. Mm-hmm. But where do you strike that balance there? Because I think we do need to reflect on our mistakes and apologize and make sure that we're making peace with it. But I also think we don't dwell on them either. I mean, I've made bunch. Sure. And I told somebody a few months ago, I've done a lot of regrettable things, but I don't have a whole lot of regrets because I've moved on from them. They're you know, it is what it is. Gotcha. I can't change it now. I wish I could, but I can't. So I feel at peace with God about it. He's forgiven me from it. So once He's forgiven me, I don't see the reason for me to dwell on it.
You got it.
So where do you find that balance? And where's, you know, again, I think the good thing for the folks listening here, you know, both of you or all three of you, how many there are, I get the concepts of Christianity. Ben's really good with the book itself, so I can come up with some ideas, and he can tell us where the book weighs in on that. But
First thing I'd do is, if I was the coach, I would tell the quarterback, don't throw it to the kid and hit him in the hands. Make him work for it, all right? Because he can make the awesome one-handed catch, but, man, you missed a wide open. And we're like that from time to time, man. Sometimes this should seem easy, but at the same time, then go out and make a great play. I think it's one that striking that balance is what you're talking about. And where I would go would be 1 John. And in 1 John it says that if we confess our sins, look, God knows we're sinners. That's why he sent Christ. If we confess, God, I'm sorry, I have not sought you like I should, or man, I really let that guy hold it and I shouldn't have. I mean, be honest and confess it. And confess means to repent from it. And then here's what it says. It says, he is faithful and just to forgive us and cleanse us from all unrighteousness. And you're exactly right. If God's forgiven me, why on earth do I carry that guilt anymore? But here's the key. When you go and you start looking at the Apostle Paul, he's at the end of his life in 2 Timothy, and he writes, I'm the chief of sinners. Wait a minute, Paul. You're the dude that's starting churches all over. You're the representative. You're the face of Christianity. And you're writing Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians. You're writing all these books, and yet you're calling yourself the chief of sinners. I think there's a balance between, there's a humility that has to be in a Christian's life that says, I don't deserve this grace that God's given me. At the same time, there's a contentment and there's a joy in knowing that, no, I'm accepted by God because of what Christ did. And yeah, I have failed and failed miserably numerous times. And at the same time, I keep that in the back of my mind that, man, I'm saved by grace. I didn't earn this. And I think that's one that if you're going to do that 1%, go back to that relentless. You've always got to have that drive. You got to have that hunger. And I believe for the Christian, it may not be the hunger as much as there always needs to be that humility. Mm-hmm. And that humility is that, man, I didn't deserve this. I didn't earn it. And rather than me just trying to go out there and perform Christianity, no, I just want to live it naturally as the Lord lives in me. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the secret, is remembering Christianity is not about, oh, you got to believe a certain things. Yeah, there we want to make sure our doctrine's right. But really, it's about Christ in us. That's the hope of glory, as Paul calls it in Colossians. And that's really what should drive us each and every day, is knowing that, no, Christ is in me. We can live these lives that strive and want to draw closer to the Lord. Will we get it perfect? No. I haven't. You haven't. None of us have. And at the same time, though, that's the beauty of God, knowing, one, his grace, but also he knows our heart. And he knows if you're real. He knows if, okay, man, yeah, I may have failed miserably, but, man, in my heart of hearts, man, I just want to please him. And so I think with the Lord, he looks at that just as much as he does, or more than, all the performance we do, is he's going to always look at the heart. And when your heart's right with him, and yeah, we'll mess up, but he's looking to see, is his heart towards me?
You just made a great point, and I thought of a funny little story about my daughter. So my daughter came to me the other day. I may have told you this the other day at lunch. I can't remember when this was, but my daughter came to me, 8 years old, and she is a sassy little girl. She's 8 going on 18 and has been for 10 years, or five years, I guess.
Right.
But she comes to me one night. She says, Daddy, I accidentally said a word, and I didn't mean to say it.
Talk about it.
But I didn't mean it the way I meant it. I meant it. I think she said hell. She said, yeah. I didn't mean it is in the bad word. I meant it is in
biblical
the place.
Biblical sense.
I said, that's okay, sweetie. She said, but I told God I'm sorry. You think he forgives me? I said, I'm sure he forgives me. And sweetie, you don't even have to worry about it, because he knows exactly what you meant. And he knows exactly what was in your heart. And if you really didn't mean it that way, then he knows that. You don't even have to apologize for it. And she goes,
ruh-ruh.
Oh.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's and she figured,
nice.
But you know, I think that is kind of kind of goes back to what I said at the beginning. I don't bother putting up much of a front on Sunday mornings to be perfect, because God knows that ain't the truth.
He's
the only one I really care about impressing. I like you, Ben. You don't get to judge me at the end of the day, you know?
Right.
So it's like,
yeah.
I'm with, at the end of the day, he knows where I'm really at. Why fake it?
I'm not the one keeping score.
That's right.
But it's funny how many people that, the pastor's coming, we got to clean the house, or we got to get rid of this, or we got to act like that. And I'm like, I'm just a dude.
Yeah.
And there's no need to put on fronts.
I mean, be
yourself, and that's who you got to be before the Lord.
Well, because like we said earlier, I don't I don't need you to make the Sunday from 11 to 12 version of me better. Like that. I mean, I'm not saying that that version's perfect, but no. It's probably the best version I got.
The 160s, I think you hit the term, man. That's
exactly
how do I go about being what God wants me to be, the other 167? And oftentimes, like I said, we're going to hit it right, and then there's going to be times when, man, dadgum, I can't even seem to get out of my own way. And those are the times that, hey, this is a great opportunity just to help people. To be able to do that.
Well, let's talk about some of those. There's a lot of one of my overarching themes in my faith right now is God's not complicated. And there's a reason for that. I mean, when God hadn't, I say God spoke to me first time. God had been speaking. I finally got quiet enough to be able to hear Him one point, heard Him. Yeah. But you know, it's funny to me because my mom has always been sort of my spiritual counselor. In fact, she's the one who made me call you last year because things got so bad. She said, "I don't have anything left for you.
I ain't got
you.
Got to
find somebody better." I've done all I've got. I don't have anything else for you. But she always talks about God told me this, God told me that. For the longest time, I didn't understand that. It's like God doesn't talk to people. Like I don't. Come on, what is that? And I consider myself a believer. I think I was. I'm glad I didn't find out if I was wrong at that time, but I felt close with God, but I never heard Him talk to me. Once I shut up, He don't shut up sometimes, and it's very clear. And it's not a voice from the heavens. It's not the clouds opening up. It's just the simplest stuff that I know when God's talking to me because it's not usually something that I would have thought of, and it's way better of an idea
totally
than I would come up
what
with.
I wanted to dream
yeah. Of. Yeah. Well, this podcast is a good example of that. Yeah. I didn't want to do it necessarily, and I've been putting it off. And when I finally, what happened, I had a little bit of spare time in my life that I hadn't had in a while. And I thought, well, what am I going to do with this? I can put more time into work. I can put more time into this. And God said, those are all cool things, but you've been thinking about giving me some more of that time. How about a little bit for me? And I thought, well, we'll talk to Ben, see what he thinks. But, you know.
He won't want to do it.
He won't want to do it.
Yeah, come on.
And then when we talked about it and you loved the idea, I said,
yeah.
Okay, well. But I know that wasn't me that came up with that thought because I didn't like it.
Yeah.
You know, but as it turns out, it's like, okay, I can see some good. I see where He's going with this, you know. But every time God speaks to me, it's the simplest things, and it's not usually something that I would have thought. That's how I know it's not me.
Yeah, and I think therein lies some of where we fall into, I don't know, a trap or something is, okay, we think when God speaks, it's, okay, I've got a great mission for you, and you got to go climb this mountain and go up here and do this great feat and all this. And sometimes, hey, in the Bible, He did. He told Moses, you go down to Egypt, and you're going to stand in front of the king, and that's a great feat. But sometimes it's something as simple as, Paul, I want you to go over here and speak to these people. Or, hey, there's somebody to go talk to. And it doesn't always have to be some great feat or some great act. Sometimes it's, you know, the simple things of, hey, call such and such and just tell them somebody's thinking of you.
Yeah.
And those are the times when I get those because I'm like yourself, man. It's not like I just think of these things of, hey, I need to call the people over there in the church that are struggling. I don't naturally think like that.
Yeah.
It is the Lord saying, you know what? They could use a visit. Yeah. They could use just a smile.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just something as simple as that. And it's good news that, look, man, God talks to us. Yeah. That's the part of, we said earlier, it's a relationship. Well, really, it's a friendship if you stop and think about it. Jesus said, no longer do I call you slaves, I call you friends. Last time I checked, friends talk. Friends can talk. And so, yeah, it's learning how to hear from Him. And again, it's not some great big voice booming from the heavens. Oftentimes it might just be when you read a passage, you know, hearing a sermon, or man, sometimes it's just in the quiet, in the stillness of just being before Him, whether it's in prayer or just getting alone, turning the TV off and just saying, Lord, I just want to think about who You are and what You've done, or just to say thank You. He'll let you know. And I think that's the thing is, I used to think the same thing. I used to hear that when I was a kid. People talking about, yeah, God talked to me. And I used to think, okay, that's just weird.
Yeah.
Until, okay, yeah, He does. And God is just as real and wants to commune with His people and wants to fellowship with His people. So, yeah, He's going to talk. It's just, are we going to tune out everything to listen?
And I think listening for that booming holy voice might be where people miss him, because I don't know about – I have a personal theory on this, and you may – I hope you have something to weigh in on it, but God's a smart aleck to me. Now, I don't think that that's necessarily because that's God's personality. Yeah. I think it's because I'm a smart aleck, and he knows how to speak my language,
he
and
relates.
He speaks it in my way. I think if for someone who doesn't think that way, I imagine he's not. But he's very sarcastic to me sometimes. And it's kind of a, idiot, that was kind of where I was going with that all along. You know, like, why didn't you think of that? You know, give me a shot. I know what I'm doing here.
I think that, if you stop and think about it, the scripture says that he created us, he formed us in our mother's womb. I mean, he knows how many number of hairs I got on my head. He knows how to speak to me in a way that I can understand it. Because oftentimes it's with me is, and you'll hear me in a sermon sometimes say, this past week it was like the Lord just said, Ben, come on, dadgum, man. How long are you going to do this and miss it? And, and at times I think he can be kind of smart alecky. I think at other times it's a gentle, tender voice. But I think it's one of listening and being tuned in.
Well, and there's another one there. Sometimes it is a gentle, tender voice. There was something, and this is the weird, this is the thing that, it was uncomfortable to me. People said, used to say to me, the Lord said this, Lord said, it was a little bit of an awkward conversation. It's like, can you hear voices
come on, man.
There?
You're
sorry.
Paranoid,
I believe in God too, but I don't believe you're hearing voices.
What's up with you?
Yeah, but it, as I've experienced it more, I was on the way to church one morning, and it didn't really, I have no idea why I was thinking this. I really don't. It wasn't a song I was listening to, it was nothing. But I had been, at that particular time, I'd been through a bunch of stuff, but it was good stuff. It was a struggle that was building and leading to good things, but I'd kind of gotten to a point where it's like, I'm not sure if I'm ready for this next step here. This is a big step. Right. It could be a big thing, but it's also a big risk, and I don't know if this is really, what God wants me to do. And God kind of said, who's to say that this wasn't what I was doing for you all along? Have a little bit of faith that maybe this is what I put you here for.
Frankly,
we're still trying to figure out if that's true or not. I don't know. But the point is, in that particular moment, I started to tear up a little bit. It was just an emotion. It wasn't even a voice I heard. Mm-hmm. It was just a feeling that, no, I'm where he wants me. I don't know if this is where – I don't know why this is where he wants me. Most of the time, I don't know why.
Right.
But I do know I'm where he wants me. The cool thing about it is, and this is why I say God's simple, as long as I know that I am where God wants me, I don't care what the purpose of that is. It could be because I'm going to find out something good tomorrow from being in this place, or it could be something that I never find out while I was in that place. Mm-hmm. But as long as I'm comfortable that I'm where he wants me, that's all I really need to worry about.
Right.
And I've always been a big worrier. I got 100 million things on my mind all the time. And I'm a very analytical person. I overanalyze every aspect of everything. But he's helped me in the last year basically to say things kind of fall under one or two categories. They matter or they don't.
Right.
If, again, simple. If they matter, you give it all you got and you worry about that. And if they don't worry about them.
Don't sweat it.
And if it's over, if it's out of your control, give it to me and I'll handle it.
That's right.
The real cool thing about that is you dig deep enough down that rabbit hole, you ain't got much to worry about. Most of it's not in our control.
Yeah. You don't control the thing.
Right.
And when it comes down to it.
Right.
You can make sure that you're
the only thing
right
we
place.
Control is the one thing I don't want, free will. I didn't want free will. In fact, I asked you that one time. Why did God give us free will? Yeah. That seems like more of a curse than a blessing. Right. And you gave me a great answer. That was a long time ago. But it's the only thing we control is our own decisions. And that's the one thing I wish I didn't have any control over most of the time. But the more I outsource to God, the simpler life gets and the better things turn out. I mean, I'm where I am today. Where I am today is a pretty cool place because of a lot of things that seem like coincidences to me. But as you piece them all together, they all started to come together about the time I started going to church more.
God was orchestrating some
right.
things. And I think that's when he was calling you to himself. He was revealing himself to you. And I think you're exactly right. I mean, it's one of, I'm trying to. How do we go about this as far as worry and fret? We worry and fret over so much, and then when the Bible tells us things like, "Don't worry about anything," Jesus says, "Don't be worrying about what you're going to wear and what you're going to eat and all the things we're consumed with. Instead, seek first my kingdom and my righteousness." Man, those are some hard, hard statements. They really are. And it's one of, okay, who can live that way? Well, me and my normal strength, I know I can't live that way. but with Christ in me. Okay, now let's see how we do this. But man, to walk around with not carrying the frets and the worries about everything and anything, that's a freedom.
It's funny too, because I've had a few situations in the last year or so where something comes along and somebody says something to me and I handle it a certain way, and then they kind of look at me and say, I can't believe you answered it that way. That's not the way I expected you to respond, or that I was expecting, and usually in a pleasant way, like they were expecting me to be angry, and I have come back not quite as angry as they thought. And they'll say, I'm really surprised by that. And I've a couple times said, honestly, me too. That's not what I expected to say either.
Six years ago or seven years ago, or two years ago,
maybe might have been different.
And that's the beauty of when you look back and you can see how God has brought you. And I think that's one of the things that for all me and all the listeners that we need to remind ourselves is, look, this journey is not a one-day journey. It's a many multi-year, and as long as I'm on the earth, journey. So, yeah, where I am today, man, 10 years, I may be totally different. And hopefully it's more to be more Christ-like. And so for you, you're seeing that. And again, oftentimes because we live day in and day out, we get frustrated because, it's, today. Well, no, look at it over an extended period of time. And that's the way the Lord looks at it as well, man. He sees how far you've come or how we're growing. And that's what he's looking for.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a destination in sight, and it's for us to be like Christ. But we're starting way back here, and we got to get there. And that's going to take, like I said, journey of a million miles, starts with one step type stuff.
Yeah.
But it is one of you start, and you watch how God begins to mold you and shape you and even take away some maybe desires and wants that you used to have, or maybe even some of the reactions that you learn. And some of that may be, look, man, I hate to say it, maybe I'm just getting older and stuff don't bother me. I yes and no, because I've seen some old codgers, put them in their 80s and 90s, that stuff bothers them that you're like, man, you're 90 years old. Why you get upset over these things?
Yeah.
So I think it is just one of a lifetime of maturing and a lifetime of growing in Christ. And I think always remember, God's playing the long game.
Yeah.
And we want to focus on this quarter or this play, and we may botch at this play, but man, we're looking down the road to Super Bowls, and we're at season number one here, or pregame, whatever, preseason. So I think, just to remember that when you look back, and I think that's the thing I always tell people is, you ought to be able to look back and see, hey, there is some difference.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if there isn't, okay, then why hadn't there been any change?
Yeah.
Because there should be some.
Yeah.
At least a smidge. And again, that goes back to the more we surrender and the more we give to him, you'll see it.
Well, if your faith is true in God, then okay, I've got to surrender my life to God. Well, that seems like a lot. Well, why? He's the one who gave it to you in the first place. It's really not yours. It wasn't yours. He gave it to you. So you should, it's very logical that we should give it up to him, but it's hard to do in practice. Like, what exactly does that mean? What are you going to ask me to do?
Well, and I think therein lies the biggest part of it is, oftentimes we think, okay, God, when we use the term surrender, I talked about it Sunday, is we use this term surrender. All right, that frightens us to begin with because, oh no, he might ask me to go to the ends of the earth, or he might ask me to, who knows what he might ask me to do. And I think it's one of, it always comes down to trust. Do you trust that God has your best interest at heart?
Yeah.
And I think that's where I always tell him is, he's always had my best interest at heart, that I know he has plans to prosper me and plans to for my good, that I can trust him that even if it does cause me to go through who knows what all kinds of garbage, and if he does cause me to go through the valley of the shadow of death, I'm not going to fear evil because he's with me and I know he's got something bigger planned. Some of the biggest hurts and heartaches in my life, I look back on and I hated them. I hated it and I hated going through it. But now I look back, again, time and perspective, time kind of changes perspective, that I can look back and say, but God, even in that time, that's where I learned who you were. That hurt that just, man, knocked me off of my feet, that's when I realized, okay, God's the one who's sovereign, not the one who either disappointed me or the one I lost. And I think that's where life can be hard in those hard times, but those are the times that God is I think he's at his best. And so we can surrender knowing that if he's got us in those hard times, he's got a plan for him, and no matter what he asks us to do, do I trust him? And I can't say that I do it perfectly, because man, there are times when I should have looked back and I'm like, Ben, you missed that one. Yeah. You should have done this, and it became fear. And I think therein lies. I mean, we've talked about two things: fear and worry.
Yep.
And I think that's the beauty of Christ, is he comes to us and says, fear not. Every time you see the disciples scared to death, fear not. And then the worry, we talked about that. And so two big things that people carry with them more than anything else: fear, worry, and guilt. We've hit three of them today.
Yeah.
Man, you ain't getting paid for this? You're getting your money's worth.
Well, you know, one of the things that it's funny, when I first kind of reconnected with God, I guess, it was, I didn't have the mindset of, this is what I kind of figured out, really. I had gone to God to fix my life plenty of times.
Right.
And what I really needed to do was say, I'm giving my life to you, God, whatever you decide to do with it. Mm-hmm. Whatever you decide, you can take it from me tomorrow for all I care, but it's yours.
Right.
And then really trying to learn what that means. Now, the interesting thing is, I remember this day very clearly from like the time I woke up to the time I went to bed that night. But I remember throughout that day, just having an understanding and an acceptance that this doesn't mean everything gets better, because at that time life was not good.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's not good when you get broke to that point. Unfortunately, it's not always that in that situation. But I was broke. I was in a mess. I mean, it was a bunch of bad stuff that had been happening. All right, well, I didn't go to God to fix it. I honestly just accepted that it's going to be a while. And it's going to be, we're talking about the long haul, right?
Yeah, that's right.
All right, well, God threw me a curveball on that. The last year, I look back at it now, and it's been a great year. It's been an amazing year, and I feel so much closer to God. And I'm talking about all these great things. Funny thing about it is I still can go back and say, now, if you're coming to God to fix your life,
right,
I still have a lot of the same problems that I had a year ago. Or at least the same amount of problems. I mean, I may have solved for a couple, and a couple might have gotten a little bit better and been replaced with new ones. I mean, it's still the same mess.
Right.
But at that time, I remember telling my mom that day, I don't know why, but I know 5 years from now, I'll look back at this and this was the best day of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, I don't care. I just know. A year into it, on paper from the outside looking in, it don't look a bit different, okay? I mean, I think it's different, and I believe, and I have some evidence to say it's different, but whether you believe that or not, we'll see. There's still time to, but I still have that same peace that I had then, and we kind of talked about it before we started recording. I think that, you know, that first year, God kind of gave me like Christian training wheels. He threw me a lot of good stuff and said, he's a rookie, he's going to need to see some good things to stick around and make sure. But now it's kind of back to, it's not always perfect.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're going to do all the right things, do all the things I tell you to do, and you're going to suffer for it a little bit. And that's just part of the game, bro. You know, I'm sorry. But
And that's like we talked about with 1 Peter. With 1 Peter, he says that he kept entrusting himself. Hey, when Peter was told, you know, hey, John 21, that Peter, I got a plan for you. It's going to involve you going to a cross. Paul signs up to, he tells him, you're going to be a disciple of mine. You're going to suffer many great things. And yeah, you go to a 1 Corinthians and you see that Paul was stoned and beaten and whipped. I mean, shipwrecked, left for dead numerous times. And you look at how they were willing to suffer because they knew, no, God's worth it. And I think therein lies the whole thing is he worth it and can I trust him? And knowing that it may not, you're exactly right. It ain't going to always lead to the biggest and best and, oh yeah, I'm going to come to Christ and, man, my 401k is going to more than quadruple. I'm going to be able to retire at 25. I'm going to be fat and happy. No, I don't think God is concerned with pampering us physically as much as he is maturing us spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, let's just be honest, those hard times are where we grow the most. If everything's golly, I'm going to date myself here. I think it's the Statler Brothers or the Oak Ridge Boys. They sung a song called Where the Sun Always Shines, There's a Desert Below. And it's true. And if you don't go through some rain, you don't get flowers, you don't get the vegetation. If your life is always sunshiny, man, that's not a good place to be, because when the rains come, and that's what he says in Matthew 7, is the rains are going to come. You know, but two men built their house, one built it on the right foundation, one built it on sand. The rains came against both.
Yeah.
The rains are going to come in life. what are you going to be? What is your life going to be founded on? Sand or the rock?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think therein lies a big answer, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think when talk about you and I both have kids,
right?
And we understand there's. I remember my mom telling me when we had our oldest son, it'll change the way you see God now, and it did. Having kids certainly changes that, but there's something that breaks down my analogy just a little bit there, and that I can look at my son. Let's use my son for example.
Okay.
I could use my daughter, my youngest son, either one. But I can look at them, and he's ADD, and he's, God help him, he cannot help it. He forgets every single thing. I mean, and it's so frustrating. His mama's going to kill him if he's not careful.
I got you.
It's easier. I don't get as frustrated with him probably as she does, because he got that gene from me, okay? I can't really say too much about it.
He is made in my image, so to speak, right?
So I tend to be a little bit more, you know, forgiving there. But it's the same thing with my daughter, too. Each of my kids have their strengths and weaknesses, obviously, like any of them. And unfortunately, they got most of their weaknesses from me, I'll tell you right now. And they got their strengths from their moms, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they'd be in trouble. But it's... That my analogy breaks down there, and that God made us in His own image, but He didn't make us perfect the way He is. So we do fall short on that. But I still, all it takes for my kids to get my forgiveness is to say they're sorry and mean it.
Right.
And then I'm over it. That's it.
Well, I think it goes back to, you know, when we're made in His image in Genesis 3, we sin, and that image of God is kind of marred in us. And that's where, again, He's restoring that through His maturation of us. But 1 John says that we don't know what we're going to be like in heaven, but when we get there, we're going to be like Him, being Jesus. So that's ultimately, He's going to get us back to that. And you're exactly right. I think your analogy is spot on, though. I don't know if it breaks down that much in the fact of, just as you are patient and you love your child, you never stop loving them. Even though, boy, they can push every button. Even though, man, there are times when you look at
it. I wish everybody could see the look on Ben's face right now. It's a little different than just the...
Yeah, no, this is
he
real.
Means this. This
is real. I've got three, and I've got one that, man, he is the spitting image of me, and there are times when I look at him and I'm thinking to myself, the old Smokey in the Bandit, there's no way he's my son. And but at the same time, I know he is. But you know what? I never stop loving him, and I mean, all it would take is for them to say, you know, what to come back to me, and I can honestly say that's a great way of looking at how God looks at us. Yeah, we're going to fail miserably, and we're going to come back with egg on our face, and I'm sure God sometimes has that same look I got of, but at the same time, because of what Christ did, yeah, He still loves me and forgives me, and that should cause us to want to continue to press on, you know?
That's the biggest point that I think is missed. You know, we talked about probably in the, you know, just chit-chatting about what we're going to talk about here today. And for listeners, this is about as unscripted as it can be. I think we talked about 10 minutes and then hit record. But
that's right.
But we did talk about this, I think, as an example. I think that you break down the country. You know, let's say 10, I don't know what percent of the country is actually Christian, but let's say 10% are getting it right and they're, you know, in church doing the quote-unquote right things, all that stuff. 50% may be non-believers that have no interest whatsoever. And then there's about 40% maybe that are looking for something. They don't know what they're looking for yet. Maybe
spiritual.
They're in church, but I'd say I was in that group. I was in church, and I was baptized, considered myself a Christian, but I wasn't where I needed to be.
Right.
I'm probably still in that camp, which makes me a good representative for the center crowd. But I'm working towards that 10%, you know, step at a time. But I think that's the biggest thing is that guilt, that when you do something wrong, it's like, okay, God will accept me back in the building, in the back row with eating the scraps, and if I can slowly earn my way back up. You got to read the story about the prodigal son, though,
there
and really understand
exactly
that, because that is my life. I'm
he
the prodigal
a
son.
Ring and put the robe on him, and you're my full son.
Right.
Your rights are restored.
And that's the feeling that I had, as much as I'd messed things up. I mean, and I'd been through stuff that was my doing, other people's doing, victim of whatever. At the end of the day, I had created some bad situations for myself, and I hadn't done a whole lot to make God proud in a really long time.
Right.
And when I said, okay, I'm back, it's, all right, we're glad you're here. You're like, you just, it's about time. Where you been? You know,
right.
it's, and I've never felt that that judgment from God that everybody seems to be so afraid of, that wrath of God. That's a really good God-fearing.
Right.
The fear of God. I think that's one that, okay, be afraid of God. That's our natural way of interpreting that. Certainly, the creator of everything in the universe is somebody we should fear and respect. But I don't look at it as I'm not afraid of God's wrath. I'm aware of what he's capable of if you don't know him, but I'm also aware of what he's capable of. I just want him on my team, right? No, I mean, if you're on his team, you don't have to worry about his wrath.
I got you.
Michael Jordan's wrath wasn't bad if you were on his team, if you're looking at basketball, right?
So, he might get on you if you didn't play right.
That's true. Good point.
But it ain't as bad as taking it out on you and dropping 40 on you in the playoff game or something. But I think that fear of God has always been something that I think a lot of people, because I agree, you know, my God is a bad God. He's an awesome God. I mean, hey, that's pretty bad when you can part the Red Sea. It's pretty, you're a bad dude, no? He's an awesome God. And I think it's one, though, of when you talked about it, that God is so far beyond us, but he's simple. And when you think about how awesome he is and all the things he created and all that he can do, I've got an awe and a reverential awe, a respect for him. But at the same time, this is the same God that, for lack of a better term, nailed his son to a tree so that I could know him and I could be forgiven. I think that's a God I want to know. I'm a big fan of C.S. Lewis and the Chronicles of Narnia. It talks about Absalom, and it talks about the lion, and I'm afraid of the lion. No, he's a good lion, and you can be, but I don't want to get on the bad side of the lion as well. And I think it's one of just knowing that, this God is so big, so awesome, but listen, he can be moved by the prayer of a child. Because, listen, you get a little child praying about something, you better watch it. Because God listens, and he will listen to the prayer of a four-year-old when he cries out to him. I mean, that to me kind of speaks to his wonder, his awe, he's so far beyond us, but at the same time, he inhabits the praises of his people, and he communes with us. That's a God that, I have a fear of. It's just like my dad when I was growing up. Man, my dad could, I saw him do some feats of strength that would scare me to death. At the same time, I knew he loved me. And I knew, okay, I don't want to do anything to get on his bad side. But at the same time, I knew if I did get on his bad side, he was still going to love me. Sure. He might end up making me hating what I did, but he's always going to be there for me. And I think it also goes back to, remember, there's always grace. And I think that's the thing of, you're talking about the 167, the other 167. Man, it's by grace. Yeah. It's by grace we're saved. It's by grace we live each and every day. And when we know that it's by grace, God gives it freely. The Bible says he lavishes it upon us. I mean, that's like when you went to eat at your grandma's house when you were a kid. It was more food than you could have fed three armies. And she just kept on wanting to make sure you were fed because she wanted her little grandbaby to grow up, but she kept feeding you and feeding you. Well, that's the picture of the way God just pours his grace out. And when you walk in that grace, that makes a difference. That it's no longer me trying to perform and me trying to make sure I make the cut.
Yeah.
No, I've already made the cut. Now it's just a matter of, okay, God, let's get better. How do I get better by you living in me?
Yeah.
By the Spirit.
There's a speech that I found, I don't know if you've seen this, but Denzel Washington has a commencement speech on YouTube. I don't know if you've seen Put God First.
Yeah.
You've seen that.
I love that he says put the slippers way up under the bed.
Yep, so you have to get on your knees to get up in the morning.
And you thank God while you're down.
That's right. Yeah, I love that. It's a great speech, and I've watched it a bunch of times. But one of the things he says in that, and I love the way I've listened to it enough times, I can about memorize his inflection. But I love the inflection of his voice when he says this. And then I'm going to pivot and say the opposite,
right.
The opposite viewpoint from my perspective too, and then we can kind of debate it out. But he says, I've been protected, I've been directed, and I've been corrected. And he says corrected with extra emphasis there. And that sort of, that's an interesting point to me because I have a theory, I suppose, on this, that God doesn't punish us as much as we think he does. He think, we do something wrong and then something bad happens and God says, we were punished for our sin. Actually, no, it's sort of like I tell my kids not to jump from the third step. I'm not telling you not to because it's not fun. I don't want you to have fun. I'm telling you not to because it's stupid and it's going to get you hurt.
Yeah.
All right. That's all sins fall into that category. Okay, it's not that he don't want us to have any fun. It's that these things are bad things that don't end to good outcomes.
That's it.
So, but I do think there are times that God corrects us, and it's not just letting our sins play out. I've committed a few of them. I've gotten away with more of them in some ways than I have others. Some have gotten me in a lot of trouble, right. And some things that were way worse didn't end up that bad.
Right.
But I think that, yeah, there is a time where he may step in and correct a little bit. But there's also a thing that I tie to that. You know what? That's part of my job as a parent, too. And I tell my kids a lot, yeah, I'm punishing you. Because you ain't allowed to grow up and act like that.
That's right.
I want you to grow up and be this type of person, and this is why. Because if you act like this for the next 15 years, nobody's going to want to be friends with you when you're 30. I'm doing all this to mold you into a good human. I say that all the time. I got to make you a good human, and I ain't got but 18 years to do it.
Right.
So it may not always be fun. Yeah. So, yeah, I do think God corrects us, and I think where people tend to get, we get angry at God. He's
right.
Punishing us.
Yeah.
He's punishing us for our, well, okay, frankly, he's probably I know he's punished me. I know he has. But he had to. It was really
right.
Stupid, and it deserved to be punished. And it needed to be strong enough that I didn't make that mistake again. Like a little slap on the wrist, I'd do it again. What was the point? He did beat me up a little bit for it. But I also have learned in the last year, growth is not comfortable.
No.
Working out is a great example. You go to the gym. Does it feel good when you're doing those curls?
That's right.
Maybe the first couple don't hurt. But you know what's bad?
Yeah.
The last two that hurt are the ones that make a difference.
And you know what's going to be bad?
And the next day.
In the morning.
The next day and 2 days later.
And you can't walk.
And you wake up. And you feel horrible,
right.
But there is there's a certain part of you that feels healthy
right.
about it because you know you're in pain for
your
a good reason.
Yeah, that's right.
This pain is literally my body repairing the muscle stronger than it was before. But when God gives us that workout, man, we get mad. God's punishing us. He's training you. He's working on you.
Mm-hmm.
Growth is not comfortable.
That's right. And I think you what you just said is basically Hebrews. Let's go back a little bit more. Is, you know, the book of Hebrews tells us that whom God loves, he disciplines, or as children. What kind of parent doesn't discipline their children? If you don't care about them. Okay, you see your kid out there playing on I-40. He drops a ball and he runs right across I-40. Man, you better believe as a parent, I'm going to be getting on that child and saying, you don't go out in that road. If I didn't care for him, and I'd probably do something to let him know that is unacceptable. And if I didn't care for him, I'd just let him keep running out there. And I think that's oftentimes we make God this tyrant, if you will, of thou shalt not do this, thou shalt not do that. Well, listen, every time he tells us thou shalt not, he's really saying to us, thou shalt not hurt yourself. Because, I'm going to use an easy one because I've seen it in people's lives. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Man, he knows how much hurt comes from that.
Yeah.
Whether it's children, whether it's the families. I've seen churches hurt from that. So, God's saying, don't hurt yourself. Listen, I'm trying to guide you here.
Yeah.
And I think it's also one of understanding that, sometimes we go through hard times. It might be because of our own stupid decisions.
Mm-hmm.
It might be because that's where God may be taking us to lead and to guide us. And I think one of the things that I always want to tell myself is, it's not always, okay, as soon as I do this, here it is. I spent the first, 12 years of my life, every time as a kid I would sin, God, please don't take my grandma. Because I knew, all right, I sinned. He's going to take my grandma. She's going to die. Well, the Lord was gracious, and she lived to be 95 years old and loved her to death. But for me, it was, it was almost a tit for tat. God's up there with the royal scoreboard. And, man, just as soon as I messed up, boy, I'm lightning bolt. And again, that goes back to, man, when you live life like that, that's almost a legalistic way of looking at it, because then it becomes, again, performance-based. And I got to do this, and I'm walking on eggshells versus – no, I'm walking in grace, and I don't want to sin against God, knowing the love that he has for me, and it kind of changes how you view it. But not everything we do is just as a direct result, but sometimes it is.
Yeah.
Because I can tell you, I say it all the time, you choose to sin, you choose to suffer.
Yeah.
Because it will cost you. Now, it may not be immediately, but there will be ramifications. And I think it's just one of knowing that just because you're going through a hard time does not mean God's mad at me.
Yeah. Well, and it doesn't, even if it's, and this might be a good analogy to close on, I'm looking down, we're running out of time probably, but when I was a kid, I played a lot of golf. When I go to golf lessons as a kid, I can tell you the quickest way I would look for a new coach would be if I showed up and I'd been shooting maybe in the low 80s and I'd hit balls and they would come out and say, man, your swing looks great. I'd say, well, then me and you ain't going to talk anymore.
Right.
Because I didn't come here to hear how good my swing was. But I think that people have the view of God that he's a police officer. You got to follow all the rules and try not to get caught, which is kind of funny because you can't not get caught. But I don't look at God that way. I look at it as, okay, I'm bringing you my mess every week on Sunday or every day or every minute as I get better, right? And I want you to tell me what I'm doing wrong. Like, that's the point. I've got access to the creator of everything in the entire universe and all the knowledge and everything that exists. Tell me what I can do better, God. Yeah. And that's how I look at it, as more of a, it's not a set of rules. It's a set of instructions to guide you, right? Yeah. And make things a little bit simpler on yourself.
Well, and let's get back to the God's not complicated. God's simple. No, he's not a police officer looking to bust you. He's not a police officer looking to throw you under the prison. I like to look at it as, and the scripture says it, well, if God is love and God is Abba Father, he's a loving dad. And when you realize he's a loving dad, he's there for us, and it kind of changes how you view it. And I think there it is. For me, he was a drill sergeant for the longest time. Police officer, drill sergeant, insert whatever you want there that makes life, I got to perform to a certain standard. But when I realized he's a loving dad that already loves me and has already forgiven me, and therefore, man, that's the way I want to live for him, just because he has given me so much and loves me that much. Yeah, it kind of changes your how you go about seeing life. And it also goes about, it takes the pressure off.
Yeah.
I'm not having to be Mr. Perfect. I can be just, all right, let's just be people who love the Lord.
One of the things in your sermon last summer that hit me was you talked about how Christians shouldn't be. It was always the three P's. You always got to alliterate.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I think it was pride, prayer, and priorities. That's what it was. Prayer, pride, and priorities. And I'll be honest, pride is a big one for me. I'm a proud dude, and I'm very arrogant and very much stuff. But
I can be too.
But I've one of the things that I'll say at work sometimes, one of my greatest strengths is putting two and two together, making five. Yeah, that's what I feel to get. But I kind of chuckled the other day when I said that maybe to somebody, and I kind of heard God, that little smart aleck, say, you know, I ain't bad at that either. And who you think made you good at that?
Sure.
You know, because he took a whole bunch of nothing and made a whole bunch of everything. So he's not too bad at it either. And what you said about if I just kind of lay back, let him, why would I want to run my life?
Yeah.
Seriously, why would I want to?
I know I'm going to end up in the ditch.
Really? I've seen me do it, right? I mean, like, Jesus, don't take the wheel. Throw me in the trunk and you do what you need to do. Wake me up when I'm there, you know?
I get that.
Unfortunately, he needs us to be there with him. I don't think we get to just hide in the trunk. But
yeah, there is still that two part.
Yeah.
I always want to emphasize. Yeah, I always talk about it's the spirit in us. Yeah, but we still cooperate. Because Paul says, work out your own salvation. We play our part in it. Yeah. So it's not that we just let go of the wheel as much as we say, okay, Lord, it goes back to that word surrender.
Yeah.
And that therein lies the big part of it. Are you willing to surrender? And are you willing to say, okay, Lord, I'm going to trust you?
Yeah.
And, you're exactly right. It is something that when you really break it down, let's not make it too complicated.
Yeah.
Let's make it about a relationship and seeking him.
If there's one thing that I hope we're able to convey in through this podcast for the, again, 2,000 people to listen, I don't care.
Yeah,
but I hope that whoever does hear it, we're able to convey the fact that it's the mercy and the grace and all that type of stuff, because we talk about it, but we don't live it out. I mean, it's easy to talk about it on Sunday mornings, but day in and day out, can you sin every day? Yep, I got that one covered. I know I can do that one.
I do it well.
Okay, can I be forgiven every day? Yeah, I can. Can I move on and learn from it without dwelling on it? Well, that's the part that I think most of us struggle with, that part. And at the end of the day, we make it more complicated because all God wants to do is do better, right? Like, try better tomorrow, come closer to me, and let's just take a step.
Keep seeking.
Yeah.
Keep seeking.
Absolutely.
And I think therein lies the gist of it is what you're going to give your heart to chase after.
Yeah.
And we will. We can be so, I think about my dog. He can be so easily distracted.
Yeah.
you know, I'm sitting there talking to him, and you know, the old squirrel over yonder.
Yeah.
And it's one of, we need to make sure that we keep our eyes fixed, as Hebrews 12 says, keep our eyes fixed on the author and perfecter of our faith. And that would be Jesus. And Hebrews 12 might be a good place to start next time, because it goes on and tells us, how do we not lose heart? How do we not grow discouraged? Well, Hebrews is there for us and tells us that. So,
well, I'd love to, brother. I appreciate you doing this.
Hey,
man. I'm excited about it. I think it was great.
Privilege. I enjoyed this. This is fun, man. Yeah, so.
Well, appreciate it. And if it's if it's not too big of a disaster, we'll try again next week. So
Let's do it. I'm on.
Thank you, brother.
All right, man.
Bye. If you made it this far, we appreciate your time and hope you enjoyed the show. Consider subscribing to be alerted every time we release a new episode, which we're hoping to do about once a week. Have a great day.